This is The Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller, written by J.D. Kirk and produced by B. Heal. Episode 9.
Thank you for coming. I'm going to keep this brief. I have a short update to provide you with, and I'll take one or two questions alongside DCI Logan, who is heading up the investigation.
Logan nodded, just briefly at the sound of his name. Instinct, nothing more. Physically, he was present. Physically, he was sitting beside the gozer at a long table in a hotel not far from where he'd nabbed Ed Walker, gazing out at a sea of faces, microphones and cameras. Physically, he was right there in the room. Mentally, though, Logan was elsewhere. His mind had been a whirlwind since Caitlin had dropped the DNA bombshell, thoughts crashing together as he struggled to come up with an explanation. It didn't make sense. None of it made sense. The teddy bear that had been left at the Reed's house carried the DNA of Owen Petrie, a man who had been in near solitary confinement for the best part of a decade. Worse, it carried the DNA of Matthew Dennison, a boy who had been murdered all the way back in 2005, and whose remains had been buried 4 years later in a small private ceremony that Logan had been invited to, but had had the good grace not to attend. Diaz McQuarrie was getting in touch with Matthew's parents to see if the teddy bear looked familiar. Logan suspected that it would turn out to have belonged to the boy. Which meant... what? How had someone come into possession of it? Why here? Why now? What did any of it mean? He kept an ear open, listening as the gozer rattled off the usual stuff. Family devastated, support of the community, a number of promising leads. Logan sat up straighter at the mention of DC Khaled's name, watched the vultures scrambling to write down all the lurid details. He recognised a few of the faces, but most were new. The old print guard had been getting gradually pushed out for a while now, their ranks thinning year on year. Logan had no sympathy for them, but if there was one thing he hated more than old-school print journalists, was new-school digital ones. At least a handful of the journals in the room were from online-only outlets. Fucking bloggers.
And now, we'll take a few questions. Although you'll appreciate we don't have a lot of time.
A dozen or more hands raised. Detective Superintendent McKenzie looked around for a friendly face, then settled on a woman near the front.
Yes.
Can you confirm if the abduction is related to the Owen Petrie Mr. Whisper investigation from a decade ago? And if so, what's the connection?
Logan waited for the gozer to respond, then realised that the detective superintendent was looking to him for answers.
Oh.
Logan sat forward.
We don't believe there's a direct connection at the moment, as such.
But there are similarities.
The female journalist pressed. Logan nodded.
We think we're looking at a copycat situation. It's 10 years since Petrie's arrest. 20 since he abducted his first victim. 14 since he killed Matthew Dennison, his last victim. Or the last one that we know of. We think someone is trying to capitalise on Petrie's, and I hesitate to use this word, fame.
Why would they do that?
Logan scratched his chin.
Why do any of them do it? Notoriety? To get their kicks?
We wouldn't like to speculate at this time,
said the gozer, shooting Logan a warning look.
Next question.
The hands went back up again. The gozer considered the alternatives, but it was Logan who singled one out. Tom Fisher, the local boy. Might as well give him a second chance to shine.
Yes.
Fisher looked taken aback at having been picked. His eyes went to his notes.
Do you have a question?
Logan pressed, sensing the impatience and growing resentment from the other journalists.
Yes. Yes, I did. Yes.
His cheeks were reddening before Logan's eyes, like someone had just slapped him on both sides of his face.
I was just going to ask, is it possible that you got the wrong man? Owen Petrie, I mean. Is it possible he wasn't guilty of what he was guilty of?
Fisher shook his head, annoyed at himself.
What he was accused of, I mean. Could it have been someone else?
No,
said Logan, dismissing the question with a shake of the head and a scowl.
Right, it's just with the...
Fisher swallowed, wilting under Logan's gaze.
How can you be sure?
Because the court found him guilty.
Spotting the warning signs in Logan's body language and interrupting before the situation could escalate.
Because he confessed to all three murders, and because we were able to gather overwhelming evidence that proved his guilt beyond any measure of reasonable doubt.
Right. Right. Cool.
His blush deepened.
I mean, not cool, but... Thank you. Thanks. That was my only question. Thanks.
More hands shot up. Logan watched Tom Fisher scribbling down the answer that Gozer had given in his notepad, or attempting to anyway. He was having problems getting his pen to write by the looks of things, and kept shaking it every few seconds to get the ink flowing. Fair play to the kid, though. The question had taken Logan by surprise. He'd have expected that sort of thing from Ken Henderson, but not from a snottery-nosed wee. Logan's eyes flicked across the faces of the reporters, searching for Henderson but failing to find him. He wasn't there. Henderson wasn't at the conference. Arguably, the one man on Earth who had invested as much of his career into the Petrie case as Logan had wasn't there.
DCI Logan?
Logan became aware of everyone in the room watching him, waiting for an answer to a question he hadn't heard.
Do you want to field that one?
Logan blinked. The legs of his chair scraped across the vinyl flooring as he pushed it back. He stood, leaned on the table, and glowered out at the media.
Henderson. Has anyone seen Ken Henderson?
Logan rapped his knuckles against the big board.
Where's my picture of Henderson? Come on, people!
Come in, sir,
said Dias Macquarie, grabbing a sheet of A4 from the printer the moment the machine spat it out.
It's a blow-up from the web, so not great, but...
It'll do,
said Logan, glancing at it, then motioning for her to put it on the board. He shot looks at Ben, Tyler and Sinead, making sure they were paying attention.
Kenneth Henderson, 58, freelance journalist and all-round pain in the arse. Made his name reporting on the Petrie case and dined out in it for years after. Knows almost as much about the investigation as I do. I've now been told he's even interviewed Petrie a couple of times in the past few years for follow-up stories, although they never saw the light of day.
Petrie could have told him about the house.
And the envelopes.
Aye, it's a theory. We said it had to be someone involved in the original investigation. Someone close. They didn't get much closer than Henderson. Our priority is finding him. Tyler, find out what kind of car he's driving. Get everyone on the lookout for it. Circulate a digital copy of this picture too. And get word down the road to Glasgow. Check out his old haunts. I want the bastard sweating in an interview room within the hour.
On it, boss.
Ben ran a hand through his thinning hair, teasing what was left of it around his fingers.
You really think he'd do something like this, Henderson? I mean, he's an arsehole, no doubt about that. But this? And with Hamza? That's way beyond arsehole territory.
I don't know. I honestly don't. By all accounts, he's had it rough lately. Job's not as safe as it once was. He needs a scoop. And what better than the ghost of Mr. Whisper? He's built a career on Petrie's story. Maybe he thought another chapter would help put him back on top.
Seems a stretch.
It is. I'm not saying he did it. I'm saying we need to talk to him. Any time anything happens with the Petrie case, Henderson is right there, front and centre. But not today. Today, right after one of our officers was attacked, he's nowhere to be seen. I want to know why.
Caitlin's phone rang. She hurried back to her desk and picked up the receiver.
Detective Sergeant McQuarrie?
Then she tucked the handset between her ear and her shoulder and started making notes. Tyler popped up from behind his screen.
Henderson's driving a red Vauxhall Mokka, boss. 2014 plate. Putting a shout out for it now.
Good. Shite!
Boss?
No, not you. I forgot I meant to talk to Tom Fisher and ask him about the cat story. Sinead, can you chase up with the paper again? Find out where that woman lives.
Sinead nodded and picked up her phone.
Have we anything back on the cat I brought in?
Aye, didn't you get the note? Moira got the local vet to take a look. Injuries were inflicted deliberately, he reckons.
Logan had been expecting that answer, but hoping for a different one. He groaned, rubbing his temples to nurse the headache that was building behind his eyes.
God, okay, right.
What's with the cat anyway, boss?
Petrie used to, I don't know, torture them, I suppose. Cut them open, break their bones. The usual mental bastard script.
He leaned on his desk, taking some of the weight off his feet. His eyes went to the battered cardboard folder he'd left there earlier, and his mind went back a decade or more.
When we initially tracked Petrie down, there was a cupboard in his flat, and it was...
Logan sucked in his bottom lip, then spat it out again.
I opened it, and there was just... death. Just all this death that came tumbling out onto the carpet at my feet.
Death?
Tyler looked around at the others.
I don't follow.
There was an old poem I heard once, or I don't know, a song maybe. It had this line in it. A litter of bones strewed the mighty bestiarium. That's what popped into my head when I opened the door. Can't even remember where I heard it.
He stared blankly at the folder on the table, as if seeing through it.
A litter of bones. Cats. Dogs.
He swallowed.
Children.
Logan gave himself a shake and straightened.
We thought they were all in there. The boys, I mean. I thought we'd found them all. If I'd known we hadn't, I wouldn't have.
He course-corrected.
I would have made more of an effort to catch Petrie before he fell.
He contemplated the folder for a while longer, then snatched it up with both hands.
Let's get this stuff up on the board,
he said, flicking the folder open.
Henderson's our first priority, but let's see if we can make some connections. If it was him, how did he get that teddy bear? How did he find out about the house and the text on the envelope? Was it Petrie? If so, we need to know when they spoke, what was said, and what else Henderson knows.
There was a clack as Dears McQuarrie put down the phone.
Report from the crime scene, sir. The bones in the cupboard at the house.
Yes.
Not Dylan Muir's. Not even human, sir. Sheep.
Logan's heart plunged down into his stomach.
Sheep?
Aye, sir. A lot of the bones had been broken. Deliberately, they think.
Damn it!
Logan kicked his chair, sending it clattering across the floor.
I thought we'd found him. I thought we'd got him.
It's unfortunate, Jack, but not our priority. This isn't that case. You said so yourself. Dylan might still be there. But for now, we need to focus on Connor.
Aye, aye, you're right. What about the sketch artist? Any luck with the junkie, do we know?
Not that I know of, but I can check.
Show Bamber a picture of Henderson. See if that jogs his memory.
Good idea. You're not just a pretty face.
There's something else, sir. Update on Holmes. The DNA on the teddy. The one they couldn't identify. They've got a match.
Henderson?
No, sir.
Caitlin replied. She looked at her screen again, checking the information for the fourth or fifth time.
It's Dylan's, sir. It's Dylan Muir's.
Logan staggered, like he'd been physically struck. The room spun, first one way, then the other, the walls blurring as his brain tried to process this new revelation. Tried, but failed. How could Dylan Muir's genetic material be on Matthew Dennison's teddy bear? The boys had been taken 6 years apart. There had been traces of Dylan's DNA in Petrie's flat, but not in the cupboard, not on Matthew Dennison's remains. He steadied himself against the big board, pulling himself together. There were dozens of ways the bear could have been cross-contaminated, he told himself. Hundreds. Maybe Petrie had stored it alongside something of Dylan's. Kept it in a school bag, perhaps, which had never been recovered. Stuffed it in one of the boys' shoes. There were explanations. Lots of explanations. Plausible explanations. And yet the room was still spinning. Logan's heart was still racing, and nausea was churning through his insides. He'd had a suspicion before. No, not a suspicion, a concern, a dread, a nagging fear that ate away at him some nights when he lay awake and wormed its way into his nightmares while he slept. He'd always dismissed it, pushed it away, beaten it down. It didn't make sense. He refused to let it make sense. And yet, it did. Here, now, it was perhaps the only thing that did, and the realization of that fact knocked the air from Logan's lungs and threatened to bring him to his knees. Someone connected to the original case. Someone close to it. Closer, even, than himself.
The sketch artist,
Logan said, closing his eyes to block out the whirling, twirling walls.
Tell him to forget Bamber.
Ah, right. Want me to send him home?
Ben asked. He was standing over by the door, the update from Caitlin having stopped him in his tracks. Logan shook his head.
Get him in here. I need him to draw someone else.
Who?
Reaching into the folder, Logan took out a photo of smiling 3-year-old Dylan Muir, his hand buried in a bag of Monster Munch.
Him. I want him to draw him, but 20 years older.
The clock ticked, the hands simultaneously counting forwards and counting down. Logan tried not to look at it, to focus instead on the scratching of the pencil on the paper, the look of concentration on the artist's face as he carried out his task. How long did Connor have left now? A few hours at best. At worst, he'd been dead from the moment Hamza had discovered him in that house. Teams were sweeping the forest surrounding the building. Nothing so far, but there was a lot of ground to cover.
How's it going now?
Logan asked for the third or fourth time. The artist was an older guy. Thin, prissy, face like a bulldog licking piss off a nettle. He sat with his legs crossed, his pad resting on a knee, half a dozen pencils tucked into the top pocket of his shirt.
Getting there?
He'd been getting there for the past 20 minutes now. Logan had taken a look over his shoulder a couple of times, but there hadn't looked like it was going to be anywhere useful. Ben had warned him he was expecting too much. The guy wasn't a trained sketch artist. He was a high school art teacher. Sure, he could probably pull together something half-decent from a detailed description, but asking him to accurately predict what a 3-year-old would look like as an adult was a big leap from there. Logan looked around the instant room at the others. Aside from Ben, who was reading the Petrie case file at his desk, the others were all on phone calls. There had still been no sign of Ken Henderson or his car. Tyler was talking to the CCTV boys to see if it had been picked up heading back down the road to Glasgow, but cameras were few and far between along the route, and the line of inquiry was looking increasingly like another dead end. Sinead was still trying to get through to the newspaper. She'd found a couple of numbers for the publisher who owned the paper, and was working her way down from there until she reached the local editor. Caitlin, meanwhile, was back onto the lab. Logan wanted to know if they could tell how recent the sample of Dylan Muir's DNA had been, or take a stab at how old he'd been when he'd come into contact with the teddy bear. She was looking pretty animated, and her voice was stern, so Logan guessed he wasn't going to get the information any time soon.
"Getting there. Almost done,"
said the artist, correctly predicting Logan's question before he could ask it. Across the room, Sinead stood up, the phone still cradled to her ear.
"Thank you. No, that's... Yes, thank you. You've been very helpful,"
she said into the receiver, her eyes meeting Logan's.
"Well?"
he asked, before she'd even had a chance to hang up.
"You find out where the cat lady lives?"
"No, sir. I spoke to the editor, got her mobile from her boss. They're not running any cat story this week."
"I don't care when they're going to run it. I just need to know where the woman lives."
"No, I mean, there is no cat story, sir. She knew nothing about it. And she doesn't know anything about a Tom Fisher either. He doesn't work there. Never has."
Ta-da!
The artist turned the pad. Logan knew what was going to be on it before he saw it.
"Shite!"
He raced out of the room, skidded along the corridor, then launched himself through the reception area and out to the front of the station. Cameras flashed. Microphones were switched on. A sea of faces turned his way.
"Where is he? Where's Tom Fisher?"
he demanded, suddenly wishing he'd brought the pad.
"The kid at the press conference. The one who asked if Petrie might not be guilty. Where is he?"
There was some confused murmuring. A few of the journalists glanced around, but most had started to fire questions at him.
"Why do you want to know?
Is he involved?
Is Reed still alive?"
Logan growled.
"Ah, get it up, ye!"
Then he turned and thundered back inside. Moira buzzed him in without a word, the expression on his face making it very clear that he was not in the mood for a debate. He was barking orders before he'd even entered the office.
"Ben, Caitlin, coordinate from here. Find everything you can on Tom Fisher, starting with his address. Tyler, Sinead, you're with me."
Everyone jumped to it. The art teacher got up from his chair, looking uncertain.
"Someone mentioned I'd get 40 quid.
Logan's eyebrows practically knotted themselves together.
"What?"
"For the..."
He gave a little wave of his sketch pad.
"For the drawing."
"Oh, for... Ben, give him 40 quid, then get rid of him. Keep that drawing."
Grumbling, D.I. Ford reached for his wallet. Grabbing his coat, Logan turned and stalked back towards the exit, beckoning Tyler and Sinead with one finger.
"Right, you two, get a shifty on."
"Where are we going, boss?"
Tyler asked, falling into step behind the DCI. Logan raised his phone, the map screen open, a red flag standing proud in the centre.
"There, whatever the hell that is, we're going there."
Logan sat behind the wheel of his Ford Focus, watching Tyler pinch zoom in on the map screen of the DCI's phone. He had parked up just along the road from a little co-op supermarket, across from a building that, Sinead had told him, had been one of the small local police stations until the new soulless monstrosity had been built in the outskirts of town.
"So, if the kid is right, he found the cat up there."
Pointing ahead to where a row of green wheelie bins stood with their backs to the metal mesh of a fence.
"That seemed right."
Glancing in his rearview mirror.
"That's where he'd walk to school. Aye. I drop him at the road end here and he walks the rest of the way himself."
"Right. Tyler, you're with me. Sinead, wait here, up front. I'll give you the keys. If Fisher's around, I don't want him seeing the uniform and getting spooked."
"You mean Dylan, boss?"
"I mean Fisher. He might not even know that he ever was Dylan Muir. What do you remember from when you were 3?
I suppose you're right."
"I'm always right, son."
He caught the look on the younger officer's face and thought of DC Khaled lying in the ICU at Glasgow Royal.
"Well, most of the time. Now come on, let's see what we can see. Sinead, up front, but don't get out of the car in case he spots you."
"What am I meant to do? Clamber through?"
"Bingo. I'll leave the keys in the ignition. We've got radios. If he shows face, call us. Don't engage unless you absolutely have to."
He and DC Niche both opened their doors and stepped out onto the pavement. The sun had tucked in behind a growing bank of grey cloud, and Tyler shivered in the cool March breeze.
"Chilly, innit?"
Logan glanced both ways along the street, then stalked across it.
hadn't noticed.
There was nothing on the ground that corresponded with the flag Harris had placed on the map. Logan had been hoping for something. A clump of fern, a blood trail, ideally, leading directly to someone's front door. Although he knew he wouldn't get that lucky. He never got that lucky. So he hadn't been expecting to find anything that conclusive. But he'd hoped for something. A suggestion of something, even. A hint that they were on the right lines here, and that this wasn't just a waste of what little time Connor Reed might have left. Tyler gagged as he poked around in the last of the bins.
Fucking hell! Why do your bins smell like that? Doesn't matter what they've had in them. They've all got that same smell.
Aye.
Logan agreed, not really listening. The houses around were all two-story terraced, with short paths leading to numbered doors. They were not dissimilar to Sinead's house, or the Reeds' home. A little older, maybe, the Highland weather having tired the construction out a little more, but more or less the same.
Should we start knocking on doors, boss? See if anyone's seen him around?
Not yet. We'll do another once up and down of the street. See if we can find where the cat was left. Or, if we're lucky, where it crawled to. It hasn't rained this morning, and it was bleeding pretty badly, so there should be. In fact...
He looked back down the street in the direction of the focus.
Ask Sinead to give our brother a ring. Try to get him to pinpoint where he found it, or at least narrow it down. If there's still nothing, then we'll start door knocking.
Right, boss.
Tyler said, setting off in the direction of the car. He'd only gone half a dozen steps when he stopped and looked down at the vehicle beside him. At first, Logan thought he was checking his reflection in the window, but then he stepped back, frowning. Logan saw it a moment later.
Red Vauxhall Mokka.
2014 plate,
Tyler added, checking at the front of the vehicle.
That's Ken Henderson's car.
His voice was low. Gruff.
Come on,
he said, walking off. Tyler looked from the car to the house it was parked outside.
What?
He asked, then he hurried after the DCI.
Stop looking back at the house. Once we're around the corner, phone into the station, find out who owns that house. There's plenty of parking along this street. Henderson could have parked anywhere, but he's right outside that gate.
They took a right at the end of the block, turning into an alleyway that ran between one end terrace and the next.
Get us back up. Tell him to stay out of sight and no sirens. Last thing we need is to spook him.
Logan stopped and took the radio from his inside pocket. Beside him, Tyler got dialing on his phone.
Sinead, you see the red Mokka parked along the street near where you were standing? Keep lookout on that house. Let me know if there's movement, no matter how small.
Will do, sir. Is that Henderson's car?
Aye, it is. So eyes peeled, constable. Shout if there's anything.
Logan and Tyler both finished their conversations at the same time.
Caitlin's on it. D.S. Macquarie, I mean.
He leaned out and looked along the front of the row of houses.
So, it's Henderson then? Not Dylan Muir or Tom Fisher, or whatever we're calling him.
Logan gave a shake of his head.
No, it's Fisher. Dylan.
Saying the name in that context hurt him, made him flinch.
But I think Henderson might be egging him on. I think that Petrie told him Dylan was alive during one of his visits and spilled the beans on where to find him. Henderson wouldn't have the balls to kidnap a kid, but he's enough of a weasel to convince some poor mixed-up bastard to do it for him.
Logan took a few steps towards the back of the block and peered over the top of the high fence, counting the gardens until he found the back of the house Henderson's car was parked outside.
I don't like the man, but I doubt he thought it'd go this far. He's a publicity-hungry, parasitic bastard, but he's no killer.
So Fisher attacked Hamza?
I reckon so, aye.
And Fisher's in that house?
I think it's a safe bet.
Then what are we waiting for?
We've got backup on the way. We should wait for them to get here.
And in the meantime, what, boss? What happens to the kid? If he's in there with them? You said yourself, we're fighting the clock here.
I'm not going to let what happened to Hamza happen to anyone else.
Hamza was blindsided. We're going in eyes open.
Logan sucked air in through his teeth, looked the DC up and down, then gave a nod.
Aye, right. You take the back, I'll go in the front. Wait for my signal.
Tyler bounced from foot to foot, becoming animated.
All right. Nice one. Let's do it. What will the signal be?
Logan took a pair of blue gloves from his pocket and slipped them on. The latex creaked as he flexed his fingers in and out.
It'll be a big crash and quite a lot of shouting.
The door was sturdier than it looked and took three good kicks before it surrendered. It swung inwards, banged against the wall of the hallway, then bounced back again. Logan shouldered it aside and stormed in, fist raised.
Fisher! I know you're in here!
The smell hit him mid-sentence, knocking him back half a step in a whole decade. Rot. Decay. Things long dead. No. No! Not again. Please God, not again. Blood spotted the walls in the hallway. A slug trail of the stuff was smeared across the laminate flooring, leading from the living room on the left to what looked to be the kitchen up ahead. Logan followed the trail, picking his route so as not to contaminate the scene any more than was absolutely necessary. He didn't know what he'd find at the other end of that streak. Didn't want to know, but had to. Stopping at the door, he took half a second to compose himself, then leaned through into the kitchen. Henderson was on the floor, face down, eyes open, but seeing nothing. His skin was chalk white, aside from a caved-in area on the side of his forehead. His life was a puddle on the floor beneath him. No point checking for a pulse. A day ago, maybe, but not now. There was a thud against the back door, then another. Logan heard DC Niche mutter on the other side of it, then turned the key and opened the door just as Tyler let fly at it with another kick.
Shit!
The DC ejected, stumbling into the kitchen. He slipped in the blood, waved his arms frantically as he tried to find his balance, then caught Logan's offered arm and steadied himself.
Thanks, boss.
He gasped. His eyes went to the floor.
Is that Henderson?
What's left of him, aye.
Any sign of Fisher?
Not yet. I haven't.
There was a squeak from beyond another door in the kitchen. A faint cheep, like the wailing of an injured bird. Soft, but unmistakable. Motioning for Tyler to open the door, Logan positioned himself in front of it, feet ready to move, hands ready to grab. With a sideways look to Tyler, he nodded. The door was pulled open, sharp and suddenly. A boy was revealed, all sobs and snot, bound and gagged and terrified, but alive. Connor. From out in the hallway there came a thump, footsteps, the front door slamming hard.
Boss!
Stay with the boy!
He dodged past Henderson's body, skidded through the blood, all thoughts of preserving the crime scene now playing second fiddle to catching the bastard responsible. Logan made it into the garden in time to see the red mocker roaring away from the end of the gate. He caught a glimpse of Tom Fisher behind the wheel. Then the car was speeding off down the street and hanging a left at the end. The Focus screeched to a stop in the middle of the road ahead of him. Logan vaulted the gate and hurried around to the passenger side. Sinead had already thrown the door open and floored the accelerator before Logan could pull it closed again, rending his shouts of,
"Go, go, go!"
completely redundant. Flicking a switch on the dash, Sinead fired up the car's lights and sirens while Logan got on the radio.
"All units, all units! We are in pursuit of a red Vauxhall Mokka. Registration, Kilo, Tango, 12, X-Ray Oscar Hotel. Currently headed..."
"Southeast."
"Southeast along..."
"Kilmally Road."
"Kilmally Road. We're the ones with the flashy blue lights going Nino, Nino. You can't miss us.
Then he scrabbled for his seatbelt as Sinead skidded off the side street and onto the main road, drawing a prolonged honk from an oncoming Co-op delivery truck.
Christ, and you said my driving was bad. We got Connor.
You got Connor?
I think he's all right.
Sinead's head snapped around, eyes wide.
He's all right.
Is there an echo in here?
Logan grunted. He stabbed a finger ahead.
Watch the bloody road!
Sinead faced front, catching sight of the back of the Mokka just as it powered around a bend.
What's up ahead? Can he get out?
They know he's coming. They'll block the road at the Farm Foods Junction. It's the only way out.
Logan punched the roof in triumph.
Yes! Catch up with him, though. Get right up his arse. I'm not having him slip through our fingers.
Sinead started to respond, then stopped in a gargle of panic. The car decelerated in a sudden lurch, tyres smoking, brakes howling in protest. Logan swore loudly and creatively as he was slammed forward, the seatbelt tightening across his chest.
What are you doing?
He's there! He's there!
Sinead cried, unbuckling her belt and scrambling out of the car. Logan followed her gaze until he found the Mokka. It was halfway through a fence, driver's door open, engine running, abandoned in the small front garden of a house. No, not just any house, Logan realised. Sinead's block. The neighbour's garden. Harris. Sinead was younger, fitter, and had a head start. Logan did his best to catch her, but she was through the hole in the garden fence and up the path before he'd hit top speed. The house's front door stood open. Shouts and screams came from inside the house, all of it escalating when Sinead charged in sight, baton extended. Logan's chest was heaving with the effort when he barreled inside behind her, almost knocking her off her feet. Tom Fisher, Dylan Muir, stood in the centre of the living room, a hand clamped down over Harris's head, the retractable blade of a packing knife pressed against his throat. Maureen, the woman Logan had seen on the doorstep earlier, knelt on the floor next to an old man, her husband, presumably, shielding him with her body. A deep gash ran across the side of his face, splitting his cheek from his ear to his nose.
Let him go. I swear to God, let him go.
Sinead?
Harris whimpered. Then he gasped when Fisher tightened his grip, jerking the boy back by the hair.
Shut up! All of you shut the fuck up!
Fisher hissed. His eyes were wild, the knife trembling in his grip. He was out of control, or on the brink of becoming so at least.
Anyone tries anything, I'll cut this kid a new mouth!
Logan raised a hand in a calming gesture and positioned himself between Sinead and her brother. Down on the floor, Maureen quietly comforted her husband and pressed a handkerchief against his wound.
All right, let's stay calm, okay? You're fine, Tom. You're fine. Just relax.
I'm relaxed. I am perfectly fucking relaxed.
He glared at Logan, eyes blazing.
You want me to kill this kid? I'll kill him. I'll do it. I'll do it. Is that what you want?
I don't want that, Tom, no. I don't want anyone to die. Not him. Not you. And certainly not me.
Fisher scowled, looking the detective up and down.
You think you're clever, don't you? You think you're so smart. But you didn't see me, did you? None of you saw me. Watching. Listening. That's how I knew when to get the kid. Connor. And this one. He took one of my cats. So I followed him. And I watched.
I don't think I'm clever, Tom. No. Far from it. If I was clever, I'd be the one holding the knife, not you.
Exactly, so back off. Do you hear me? Back off!
I'm backing off, Tom. Look, here's me backing off,
Logan said, raising both hands and shuffling back a few paces. Sinead sidestepped out of the DCI's path and then took another shuffled sideways step that brought her out of Fisher's immediate line of sight.
The thing is, it's not me you have to worry about. It's the marksman.
What?
Windows, Tom.
Gesturing to the panes of glass at either end of the room.
Direct line of sight, wherever you go. If they think you're going to hurt the boy, then they'll take you out. They have to. They don't have a choice.
Fisher's gaze went first to the window behind Logan, then turned to look at the other window a few feet away at his back. Sinead shuffled a step closer, staying white.
Bullshit! There's no one there! You're lying!
I'm not lying, Tom. I wish I was, believe me. Like I said, the last thing I want is anyone dying today. But I'm afraid that decision is no longer in my hands, son.
Logan indicated the window with a thumb.
It's not even in theirs. It's in yours. You've got the power here, Tom. You're the one making the decisions.
Fucking right I am. Fucking right, I've got the power!
I'm glad you understand that, Tom. And I'm sure you appreciate the responsibility that goes along with it.
Fisher's face contorted, his eyes narrowing.
What?
Well, decisions have consequences. And unless you're careful, one of those consequences is going to involve you getting shot through the head by a police sniper.
Logan raised his hands again, fingers splayed, palms forward.
And like I say, I don't want that. I promise you, I will do everything I can to avoid that outcome. But you have to help me, Tom. You've got to give me a hand here.
Down on the floor, Maureen began to cry.
Just let him go. Let him go.
Shut up!
Fisher seethed, tightening his grip on Harris's hair.
I told you, everyone, shut up!
This situation isn't as bad as you think it is, Tom. Connor's unharmed. DC Khaled, the detective you stabbed, he's alive.
He shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't have come snooping round.
I am pretty sure he regrets that now. But the point is, they're both going to live. They're both going to be okay.
For a second or two, Fisher almost looked like he might buy it. But then his face darkened, and his voice took on a desperate, frantic edge.
What about Henderson? Henderson's not going to be fine, is he?
No, but he was probably asking for it. I've known him for years. It's a miracle I never killed him myself.
Harris squealed as Fisher pressed the knife more firmly against his skin.
You're joking. Stop joking. Do you think this is funny?
No, Tom,
You think it'll be funny when I split this kid's throat open? Will you talk about that too, eh? Will you?
Relax, Tom. Relax. I was just...
Stop telling me to fucking relax!
He thrust the knife forward, waving it in Logan's face.
Now fuck off before I...
The baton caught him on the wrist. Fast, hard, sudden. The room was filled with the sound of breaking bone, although this was almost immediately drowned out by Fisher's screams.
Ah!
The knife landed on the floor at Logan's feet. A sudden shove on the back sent Harris staggering forwards. Sinead dived and caught him before he could fall, blocking Logan as he tried to grab for Fisher. He missed, tripped, stumbled. Fisher was already racing for the door, his shattered wrist held close to his chest, sobs of agony bursting as bubbles on his lips.
Stay here, watch them.
He was out the door a handful of seconds behind Fisher, along the path in time to see the lad racing along the pavement and tumbling awkwardly over a fence that divided it from a narrow strip of overgrown wasteland. Fisher wailed with the pain the landing brought, but it drove him on, launching him to his feet and propelling him through the undergrowth. Logan ducked through the fence like a wrestler entering the ring. He didn't have to catch Fisher, just keep him in sight. He could hear sirens somewhere close by. The place was going to be swarming with uniforms any minute. There was nowhere left for Fisher to run.
The dogs will be coming in a minute, Tom,
Logan announced, picking his way through the jaggy bushes and nettles that turned the waste ground into a maze of low-level suffering.
No point running. Not now.
Fisher stumbled up an incline, then stopped at the top. He turned back to Logan, swaying unsteadily, his arm clutched to his chest.
That bitch. She broke my wrist. She broke my fucking wrist!
You didn't give her a lot of choice in the matter.
He stopped halfway up the slope and looked Fisher up and down. It was there, right enough, around the eyes. The similarity. The resemblance to the boy in those photographs. The boy he'd never found. The victim he couldn't save.
Come in quietly, Tom. With me. We can talk. Given the circumstances, we can talk.
What circumstances?
Fisher said, spitting the word out as if it left a bad taste in his mouth.
I know who you are. I know what you did.
He caught the look in Logan's face and grinned.
Yeah, didn't know that, did you? I know what you did to my dad. You messed him up. You locked him away.
Your dad? Who? Petrie? Petrie isn't your dad's son.
What? Yes, he is.
No. I'm sorry, Tom. That's not true.
Yes, he is. He's my dad and you set him up. You threw him off that roof. You took him away.
That's what this is about, isn't it? You thought you could make us doubt the conviction. If Mr. Whisper was still out there, then we'd have to let Petrie go.
Well, you would. You'd have to. Henderson told me.
No, son. That's not how it works. Did Henderson put you up to this? Was that it? Did he tell you we'd let Petrie go if you kidnapped Connor and sent the bear?
A jolt of pain shot through Fisher's arm, making him gasp. He glanced behind him, then danced on the spot, nursing his wrist.
He was going to turn me in, after I stabbed the policeman. He said I'd gone too far. I couldn't let him tell you. I couldn't let him tell anyone.
So you killed him?
I had to. I didn't have a choice. I just wanted everything to go back to the way it was. I just wanted my dad back.
Whatever Owen Petrie made you believe, he is not your dad's son. I've met your dad. He's a good man. He's nothing like Petrie.
Stop saying that. He's my dad. He's my dad and you took him away from me. You took everything from me.
The way he said it, the twisted snarl, the clenched fists, the shriek of desperation brought the terrible reality of the situation home for Logan.
Jesus, you've been alone this whole time. Since we caught him, you've been on your own.
Fisher, Dylan, said nothing. He just stood there, staring defiantly as he gulped back tears.
I'm so sorry, son. I tried to find you. For years, I really did. You have no idea.
His voice thin and croaky.
But I was looking in all the wrong places.
The ground rumbled faintly. Fisher glanced behind him for a moment, then back to Logan.
You're lying. You locked up my dad, and now you want to lock me up too.
You need help, son. Specialist help. You've been lost too long.
Logan held a hand out, bridging the gulf between them.
Come on with me, Dylan. Come on home.
Fisher blinked. Once, twice, a series of expressions crossed his face. Surprise, confusion.
Dylan? Who's... What are you... What are you...
Then his expression became something else. Realization. Acceptance, maybe. His eyes went white. The rest of his face went slack. He gave a half-hearted snort. The ground rumbled, louder this time. Logan worked out too late what it was.
Shit! Shit! No!
Powering up the incline.
Dylan.
Fisher said, rolling the word around inside his mouth. And then he stepped backwards beyond Logan's reach, fell onto the train tracks on the other side of the incline, directly into the path of the 1141 to Glasgow, and was lost to the oncoming thunder. DCI Jack Logan and D.I. Ben Ford sat in the front seats of Logan's Ford Focus, watching Duncan and Katrina Reed take their boy home. The family stopped at the gate, as Logan had advised, to let the press photographers fire off a few hundred snaps in the space of 3 seconds, and to utter a few rehearsed sound bites.
We're just grateful to have him.
We thank the police and the community for all their hard work.
I'm going to have ice cream.
That done, Constable Sinead Bell escorted the family up the path, while four other uniformed officers moved in to encourage the press to be on their way.
You did good, Jack.
Logan didn't respond. Not at first. He kept his eyes fixed ahead as a few spots of rain flecked the windscreen. The sky was once more heavy and fat with dark clouds, and they were doing more to chase off the media vultures than the police.
Storm's coming.
There's always a new storm on its way up here. We get through them. They all pass, sooner or later.
They watched Sinead and the Reeds disappear inside the house. The liaison was going to hang around for the rest of the day to offer them any immediate support they might need. Connor had been checked over at the hospital, but he was going to need a lot of help going forward. Professional help. Logan hadn't been able to stress that to the family enough.
Christ, we should probably let Ed Walker go.
His eyes going to the house next door to the Reeds.
God, aye, I'd forgotten we still had him. What about your head?
Logan reached up and felt the sharp ends of the sutures with the tips of his fingers.
It's fine.
You try to ruin your youthful good looks.
Take more than a clout to the head to mess up this mush.
No charges, then?
No charges.
They sat in silence a while longer. The press were all getting into their cars and vans. One by one, they were pulling away, leaving the Reeds to get on with their lives.
So, Henderson, then?
Aye,
Logan confirmed, his contempt evident in just that single word.
But I mean, for a story? I don't get it. Why would Petrie tell him about Dylan? And if he did, why didn't Henderson just run with that? He could have found the missing kid, been a hero.
Christ knows. Maybe Petrie did tell him. Or maybe he just figured it out himself, somehow. He's always maintained we didn't do things by the book with the original case. Maybe he thought he could prove he's been right all these years. Get one over on me or something. Maybe Petrie put him up to it. Or manipulated him into putting Dylan up to it anyway. Maybe it was all an attempt to cast more doubt in his conviction. He can be a persuasive bastard when he wants to be.
Ben looked sceptical.
He's no the cabbage he makes out he is.
Ben tactfully steered the conversation in a different direction.
You think Henderson would have let Fisher kill Connor?
I don't know. I mean, he was an arsehole to the core. But I'm still not convinced he was a murderer.
Guess we'll never know.
Aye. Guess not.
The front door to the house opened. Sinead emerged and stood on the step, chatting to someone inside. She was all smiles and animated gestures, so Logan guessed it was one of the Reeds. Katrina, probably.
She worked out well. You still got a knack for spotting the good ones.
Not always,
said Logan, shooting Ben a disparaging look.
Funny.
Sinead said her farewells and turned away from the house as the door closed.
Dylan Muir's parents,
he said, still facing front.
They never find out.
Ben turned to him.
You're not serious.
I am. Dylan helped kill those two boys, and then all this, with Connor, Henderson and Hamza. They can't find out. It'd kill them.
But isn't it better they know? Isn't it better they get some sort of closure?
Not this. Not like this. This wouldn't be closure. This would be the end of them.
Aye. I mean,
Ben began, But words failed him, and he stopped there.
As far as they know, we're still looking for their boy.
He turned the key in the ignition as Sinead closed in on the car.
And we'll never stop.
There was a going-away party for Logan in the station canteen. It wasn't a particularly grand affair. D.S. Macquarie bought a pack of cakes from the farm foods up the road, and D.C. Niche put the kettle on. But it was the thought that counted. The conversation started slowly, and mostly centred on the case. Gradually, things picked up. They discussed D.C. Hamza's serious but stable condition, the fact that Ben had never got the double chips he'd asked for, and then Sinead had demonstrated, via the medium of mime, what Logan's high-speed driving skills were like. By the time they were on to Tyler's inability to kick in a door, they were laughing like old friends. But by then, the cherry bakewells had been eaten, and the tea had been drunk, and it was time for the party to come to an end. Logan wasn't big on goodbyes at the best of times, so he kept things short and sweet. Or sweet by his standards, at least.
I'll be honest, when I first met you, I wanted to beat the shite out of you. Nothing personal, mind. It was just the hair. And a bit of the face. Mostly the hair, though.
Tyler grinned and ran his fingers through his immovable locks. He'd reapplied whatever chemical concoction held it in place, and it immediately returned to its original position when he took his hand away.
Ah, you're just jealous, boss.
Aye, probably.
Logan admitted. He shook Tyler's hand.
Good work, son. Pleasure working with you.
You too.
Well, pleasure is maybe stretching it.
Tyler laughed and stepped away as D.S. Macquarie approached. Logan spotted Tyler sidling closer to Sinead, considered putting a stop to it, then decided not to bother, just this once.
Sir,
said Caitlin, shaking his hand.
It was good working with you. You have some interesting methods. I reckon I've learned a thing or two.
Oh, God, no. Forget anything you've learned from me. Seriously, keep doing it your way. I'm the last person you should be getting inspiration from.
Yeah, I was just being polite, sir. I'm not going to do any of that.
Logan wiped a hand across his brow.
Phew. Had me worried for a minute there.
And then it was D.I. Ford's turn. Neither man said much. They didn't have to. There was a handshake that became a shoulder pat, then a hug.
Tell Alice I say hello.
I will.
Does she still hate me, by the way?
With a fire of 1,000 suns.
Jesus, still.
You killed Harry.
By accident.
We both know it wasn't an accident, Jack. Anyway, even if it had been, it doesn't matter. You still killed him.
Both men realised then that the others were staring at them in confusion.
Harry Pricklepants,
Ben said, as if that explained everything.
It was this ugly bastard of an ornament. Little hedgehog with trousers on it. It was a mercy killing of anything.
The sense of relief from the others was palpable.
Tell her I said hello anyway.
D.I. Ford nodded.
I'll pass on your best.
Mind if I walk you out, sir?
Sinead asked when Logan turned to talk to her.
Aye, escort this man off the premises, constable.
D.I. Ford instructed. He lifted a napkin from the table, revealing the cherry bakewell he'd been keeping hidden, then peeled it out of its little foil case.
And see that he doesn't come back.
How's Harris?
Logan asked, as he crossed the car park, headed for Logan's car.
He's all right, surprisingly. Our aunt and uncle came down from Nairn. They're going to stay a few days. Chief Inspector Pickering has said I can take a few days to get him sorted.
Take him up on that.
I will, sir. I wanted to be there this afternoon to get Connor home. See it through.
Aye, I get that.
They reached the car and stopped by Logan's door. The rain had come down in sheets for half an hour, but now the blanket of cloud had become thin and patchy. allowing glimpses of the blue sky beyond. The storm was over, for now, at least.
I wanted to say thank you, sir, for getting me involved, and for everything with Harris. You didn't have to do either.
Well, I kind of have to help kids who are being held at knife point. It's pretty much in the job description.
Sinead smiled and nodded.
Oh, is it? I should probably read that at some point.
Logan wrinkled his nose.
I wouldn't bother. It's a bit dry, and you can see the ending coming a mile off. Besides, you don't need it. Just keep doing what you're doing. You've got this.
Thanks. So I suppose it's back to directing traffic and stopping the high school kids drinking down the riverbank at lunchtime.
She smiled dreamily.
Can't wait.
Aye, well, I wouldn't get too used to it.
He offered a hand for her to shake, but she stepped in and hugged him instead. He patted her back a little awkwardly. Then she pulled away and stepped back, making room for him to open his door.
Safe journey, sir.
Thanks, Sinead. Tell Harris I'll send him tickets to my next ballet performance. Then we'll see who's laughing.
I will, sir.
Logan opened the car door, shrugged off his coat, then tossed it onto the passenger seat. He was about to get in when Sinead spoke again.
You should call her, sir.
Logan paused, one foot in the footwell.
Your daughter, I mean. You should call her.
For a moment, Logan looked lost in thought.
Aye,
he said, climbing into the car.
Maybe.
And then he pulled the door closed, fired up the engine, and the Focus swept out of the car park to begin the long journey south. DC Hamza Khaled regarded the bag of grapes with an expression that was giving very little away.
Did you check if they were halal, sir?
Logan's eyes widened.
What? Shite, no, I thought...
I'm kidding.
He grimaced as he shuffled himself up the bed a couple of inches. It was the best he could do for now, but it was a start.
Sit down.
Logan shook his head.
I'm not stopping. I've got an appointment. Just wanted to stop by and say hello. Make sure they were treating you all right.
It's mental, sir,
said Hamza, dropping his voice to a whisper.
They're treating me like a proper hero. I mean, check it out. Private room. Some of the nurses have even been asking for autographs and selfies. Whatever you do, didn't I tell them all I did was get myself stabbed?
You did a lot more than that, Hamza. A lot more.
Says the man who brought Connor home.
Logan shook his head.
Team effort all the way.
They chatted for a while, about the case, about the attack, about DC Nisha's hair. Logan apologised. Hamza waved it away. And then, Hamza's wife popped her head impatiently around the door, and it was time for Logan to go.
I'll check back in tomorrow, assuming I can fight my way through the mob of fans out front.
Aye, good luck with that.
He met Logan's eye, and while they said nothing, something passed between them. Some understanding. Some bond.
So, that's it then, sir. Case closed. All done.
Logan drew himself up to his full height.
Not yet, son. There's one last thing to take care of.
The city had felt more claustrophobic than he remembered as he'd made his way through it. The M8, busier and more choked with traffic as he'd crawled along it, headed east. His conversation with the receptionist had been brief, but friendly enough. She hadn't asked any questions as he'd signed the book. They knew him well here. Well enough.
Any joy?
Indicating the open newspaper on her desk. A couple of the jobs had been ringed in black pen. She smiled nervously as she flicked the page.
I was just having a look.
Don't blame you,
Logan replied, finishing his signature with a flourish. He picked up his own newspaper, which he'd brought in, then tucked it under his arm.
Good luck.
Petrie was sitting in his usual chair, back to the window, glassy doll eyes fixed on nothing in particular. Logan approached without a word, then stood looming over him. The two men separated only by the little rolling table where Petrie ate his meals. Still saying nothing, Logan unfolded the newspaper. It was a copy of that day's Herald. He could have picked out any one of the Scottish dailies, but had selected this one for the impact its combo of headline and image would make. He placed the newspaper down, turned to give Petrie the best possible view of the front page. Logan watched him, waiting for the moment when the fog behind Petrie's eyes would briefly clear, revealing the monster that lurked within. When it happened, Petrie's throat tightened, ejecting an involuntary grunt. His eyes met those of a young man in his early 20s. A pencil drawing, but a damn accurate one. Well worth the 40 quid. "Kidnapper dies in train suicide," was the headline. Logan had liked the simplicity of it. No messing, no wordplay. Just the facts, blunt and raw and brutal. Logan watched as Petrie tried to stop his shoulders shaking. Almost admired the bastard's attempts to hold himself together. The door opened at his back. Dr. Ramesh's voice was one long sigh of exasperation.
"Detective Chief Inspector Logan, I thought I'd told you not to turn up here. I thought I'd explained you couldn't keep doing this."
"Don't worry, Doctor. I'm done here."
He allowed himself another moment to enjoy Petrie's suffering.
"I'm done."
And then he turned to the door, strode out of the hospital, and headed back towards the city he called home.
This is A Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller, written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Be Here.